Would anyone like to ask or share anything?
I'd like to know if you plan to lie down. Do you have any specific technique or focus on putting focus up? You can advise us.
Could you hear the question? So just to be really clear, I think rather than sharing what happens for me, I can answer the second part of the question. What might I advise you? I think usually the first couple of days, there's a lot about resting for most people. And so if we can allow that, then it's less confusing. So that's one page, turn page. And then still, meanwhile, while resting, while getting rested, which mysteriously can happen, we actually can get rested. But meanwhile, the feeling of inside the body. And so for a lot of people, it's really like down and back and noticing that we can feel the down and the back of the body and the places that we're in touch with the ground. And so the mind, meanwhile, is still going on or immediately comes again. So it's either never stops or seems to never stop or comes back immediately. And especially when we do sort of land in some intimacy with our life, we might suddenly be thinking about the least important thing as if it's the most important thing. So that's nothing wrong with that. It's interesting, even. And again, it helps, I think, just to have that acknowledgement of what happens in a human being many times, rather than feeling as if you're in this struggle to not drown. But these are things that happen. It happens like that many times. So what's a more deeply restful position? And it's also good to find the best position for sleeping when you're sleeping. And it's probably a little bit different to feel for the most deeply restful position for the hall, even though you might be sleeping much of the time in the hall. But starting to discern the good sleeping position and the good, maybe several meditation positions, which can have, where the hands are can help. If you remember from other retreats, and just to mention that for people who are new, just for example, having the hands on the inner knees can help drain out all of the thinking or some of it, help digest experience as well as food. It can help bring energy down out of all. Or holding any finger of either hand, or more than one finger. So it's the kind of thing that, because it's free and you can do it to yourself, that we don't do it. If it would be like, okay, I'm gonna give you the secret initiation, but it costs $100 per session, per 5 minute session, better, no? And you have to, I don't know what, before you know, the preliminary thing before. And then I'm going to tell you, like, in some code language that you hold your index finger during the meditation and then you're part of the club, you know. And then again, do it again. The second time it costs double the 200. Sorry, but the way, you know, it has to be, so. and maybe go walk backwards this time around the ashram 100 times, and then hold your middle finger. And then we have 10 fingers, so. Then the one that's sort of a favorite one that's not as comfortable of hand positions is, let's say, the left hand on the right shoulder and the right hand on the right hip. And it usually is better if you have your skin-to-skin contact on the shoulder, just because it sticks better, so you can relax more. So it's fine if you prefer to do it on top of your clothing. You can do it without touching also. It's not actually about the contact, but this usually sticks better, and then the arm relaxes. You can also use cushions to help it relax. And then the feet are equal to the hands, so any part of the foot, it can be magical. So anyway, feeling your position and feeling where the hands are can really help both for sleeping and for meditation, for finding what's deeply restful, whether you're sitting in a chair, sitting on the ground, lying down, front, back, side. You can use a foot on a part of the body. You can use a hand on a foot on a foot. So then there's all of that to explore. One thing that's very cool, I just find it very interesting more and more. In the first couple days, where most people, not everyone, are really, the alarm system's coming down and resting is happening. If we're lucky, that's not always the case, but if we're lucky, a couple days at least of we can't believe how much we're sleeping and getting more in contact with body and mind, we find how exhausted we are. So there can be that like, oh no, I thought I was rested and now I feel more tired. I better stop resting. But it's usually more, seems to be more like getting in touch with, even the tissues are just like, stop, please stop. So we can feel more tired. Also, there's on retreat and especially in this town, it seems like some kind of, I don't know what, atmosphere or something that really helps. It's almost like a big hand that just keeps you down in a good way in meditation, rather than, it can be harder sometimes to just be normal. So you're just down. Just, okay, rest. It's not, you're not going crazy probably. You're probably not sick. It's sort of meditation starting to happen. But it can feel heavy sometimes. It can feel even achy sometimes. But anyway, what I find very interesting also is that during the, let's say, initial resting process, we're exploring where could I tune to, whether it's the body or a deep wish, if I don't feel much the body, or the sounds. In what way can I kind of arrive here? And let the thoughts be secondary. So mostly letting them go on. Sometimes it's worth just a little bit of a yank back, like, bus. The Indian word bus is very, can be helpful, just bus. Whatever, anything else to break the habit energy. But meanwhile, there seem to come these blips. It would be like our programming has been so smooth and so continuous so much of the time that we didn't know it was programming. And now there start to be these little breaks in the program, as if the TV screen kind of goes like that for a second and we're like, nah, okay. Absorbed again, and it keeps blipping. And we dismiss it. But it might be you remember a dream, or you remember some other moment in your life, or you just notice something in nature, or you just feel some tenderness, some little blip in the programming that we tend to dismiss. But by acknowledging that that's part of a process towards meditation, towards our inner guidance, that we could kind of, almost like, you know, I mean, now it's become such a trite thing, but the dream catchers of some of the Native American people in the what's now the United States were to catch bad dreams. But it would be like we make some kind of blip catcher, some kind of web or net that is ready to take that as inner guidance, that memory of a dream, not as like, oh, my mind is so crazy. Why do I keep thinking of that moment in that dream? What does it mean? I don't know what it means. And then, okay, stop, bus. But just let it get caught in this web of interest in what ways inner guidance might come up rather than down. And then getting the feeling, or just leaving it there. If it's a dream, maybe just leaving it there. If it's a memory, there might be a feeling or atmosphere that we could kind of let it soften your tissue. Or if it's nature, just wordless, some kind of moment. If only it could be that long. Moment of communication. That we could just not figure out for now, but kind of receive it deeply. Receive it very deeply. And then, if we get rested a bit, or if we just get a little bit more used to being here, so maybe I'm not rested, but I'm less alarmed. The alarm system is less. It's more ordinary here now, okay. Maybe in a couple days. Maybe tomorrow. There's no, it's not a test or something. Everyone's coming from so many different places, in so many different places. It can start to happen that you don't fall asleep when you lie down or when you feel restful. And the way I feel to talk about it is as if we are lying on the bottom of the sea. Maybe not so deep that it's dark. It doesn't have to be scary, but we're at the bottom on some nice sand that has its ripples in it. And as if our belly could just sort of pull the sand into a little mound here. So we're like feeling the belly's feeling presence. But it's all down here. It's all just like a... rather than the way we normally would try. But if I'm not rested, that's not possible. So, or maybe try. But usually when I'm more tired, then what I have to use is like a tattered, raggedy mind. And I'm just trying to feel my breath. And that's fine. That's good enough for now. But if you're also resting at the same time, then it's like... it's like maybe in the airport if you walk on the moving sidewalk. It's like, whoa, it goes further. And meanwhile, the inner guidance is sort of twinkling through and giving you the more important sort of information about the atmosphere and tissue quality that can happen, that is much more of the what holds the space of the meditation than what I think I'm trying to do. So yesterday I talked about heat, and I'm not even sure if I mentioned the second factor of release, heat and release. So it's just feeling, letting the tissue feel its way towards what's enough containment, which I called heat yesterday, enough, good enough, like, okay, I feel the ground, or the ground is here, here I am, here's the sounds, here's the deep wish, here's just the hum in the belly. This is going nuts, but here's the hum in the belly. This is going nuts, here's the hum in the belly. Again and again and again. So I was going to say earlier, the biggest obstacle is our lack of patience, because we have ourselves set up basically to fail at anything that's really alive. We want it to be so systematic, and thank goodness it isn't really systematic. But we get into the rhythm of the living, and we start to get the hang of when the mind is more bright, when the mind is more ragged or jagged, when the mind is, when the sleepy mind is a good thing, because we can actually go deeper, when the sleepy mind is just allowing the agitation and self-hatred to just burn us up. So then it's still not like that gathering into the belly is the most important thing or the end of the story, but it's something that when your inner guidance is still clarifying and your mind is awake and not too bothersome, the heart is not hurting too much, the body's not hurting too much, it can be a way of not interfering with your own process, that you're still getting to know what it is and how to feel it. So we could say it's kind of a way of biding time. It's a kind of a way, but without making too much trouble for ourselves. And then over these days, we'll go into a little bit more if something does really hurt, or if something is really interesting or whatever. And also we'll go into sort of a whole wing. So half of the practice for most of us at least is about finding some friendliness with ourselves. I think the whole practice is finding friendliness with aliveness, but half of it nowadays is finding some friendliness with this part of life, because our programming is so against. Again, like I said yesterday, the good thing is that these are really deeply natural occurrences, that there could be love for this, even though we don't understand why. But since love isn't like, because you're so nice, I love you, it's not that, because that's not what love is. And since love and those other, the things that aren't because you did that, then I give you something good. Since that's not what we really enjoy, and what we really enjoy keeps on somehow surviving through all of the torture, it's possible. It happens. And so I guess maybe another encouragement is much of what's really helpful and important in our spiritual path happens when and where we're not looking. And it's another reason it can be helpful to have these really simple practices of just being with direct experience in whatever way, whether it's sound or color or body sensation, or whether it's how I really do in this moment feel the deepest wish somehow alive in me, not that I made it up, but here it is. They're beautiful practices. They have some benefit. They can inform our decision making pretty well for now, but they don't really reach the deeper ground that we kind of long to be connected with. But it's kind of a good thing to be getting to know these materials and these tools meanwhile, so that all of this deeper things and more subtle things can kind of do themselves, and we find out later how good. Is there another question or anything to share so far? So I have a theme of revolution today. And so, having said that there seems to be something deeply natural that is ready for transformation, I'd like to just raise some what I find very interesting questions for ourselves, for each ourselves. Sometimes it's easy to start to use a word like transformation, really easily, like, oh, of course I want transformation. And I'd like for every one of us, including myself, to really be in touch with what inside us does want transformation. Or maybe the word want can change, but it does go with transformation. It knows transformation is the way to go. It'll lean into transformation. It likes it. And also what part of us, which might be very much the part of us that we're used to as being myself. But what part of me actually does not want to transform? If we really think about what it is to transform, like for so many examples, but one easy one would be wood and fire. And it's such a nice metaphor, wood and fire, the fire transforming the wood into something more subtle, bringing out the energy and the brightness. It's a great metaphor. But if I'm feeling like I'm the wood and that's the fire, then basically I'm against transformation. I'm against my spiritual path. I don't want to turn into powder and heat and smoke and then not find myself anymore. I'd like to find myself. Me as me, I'd like to find myself, or I'd like to watch the performance of my transformation be played out in some sort of archetypal drama that I can recognize. But to transform is to go beyond recognition. I think that's actually exactly what it is. It's going through something after which what is before isn't. The landmarks are not. The what I thought I am isn't. It actually isn't. It's not a metaphor. And so I think I want you to feel how it's natural and okay that there's a maybe so much of us that actually does not want to. Of course it doesn't want to when it's taken in that way, when our understanding is that storyline. The wood is destroyed. The wood is no longer wood. And we don't know if the fire enjoys its brightness and its heat, having that much energy. We don't know. And the ash apparently is pure, but we don't know if the ash enjoys its purity. Ash, you know, what's left, the solid part after the fire. I'm not so sure what this is. And I'm not so sure if it might sting or something. So,
what?
It's
Is it alive?
It's moving.
It is.
Maybe, yeah. You can use that if you want.
I think it's moving?
Mm-hmm. Very slowly, it's come this far.
Where is it?
It's this thing. It looks like maybe like a ball of fluffy seed from a tree, but then it's... And I thought maybe it was ants, maybe a couple ants working together on something, but I don't think it is. No. Some caterpillar that's demonstrating...
how strong it is.
Also how strong it is, and asking us, what is it like to be inside the process of transformation? Probably hungry.
Somebody helped, huh? Went fast now.
Yes, hopefully. And so, exactly. Sometimes we might have been helped and we're like, where the F am I? Like, at least I kind of was recognizing the terrain. And now... And who knows, maybe we were just helped in a big way. Okay. So I think it makes sense we could accept that along the way it would make sense that we will feel confused. And it doesn't mean all is lost. It would make sense that along the way there could be something painful that's not that other kind of painful. And we can start to learn. Maybe it's possible to discern sometimes. At least two kinds of painful. One that's wood turning into light and heat and ash and smoke. And one that's getting hurt in some way that none of us would wish on each other or ourselves. And that happens to all of us. I don't think we know why yet. But so there can be a kindness with each other when it's that alive kind of painful that's not trying to get you out of that painful. But we have some questions like, so what? So what? When your wood is falling apart and so, so hot that I can't touch you, so what? Also, when it's painful, you were helpless and someone hurt you, or something hurt you, or you hurt you. I start to wonder if it's somehow the same, almost the same, really, really deep eyes. Or meeting. That maybe when it's painful because you got hurt because you were helpless and something more powerful squished you. Maybe the same deep eyes as when it's painful transformation. And maybe that can help that suffering that happens to every single one of us that seems like it shouldn't have to happen, but that does. Maybe those deep eyes, like deep meeting, seeing that it's painful, that I wish it didn't happen, that it did happen. And that's not all you are. There's something deeper. Maybe that helps that suffering actually start to fall into the transformation process and not just be like a crust that we carry around or something. But mostly I think it could be good to just have these questions, or your version of these questions, or where these questions branch out for you or branch in for you. Because it's so important right now, I think, to really have a different orientation in our spiritual path and our life. I don't know if there's a difference between spiritual path and life, but if there is, then both of them. A really different orientation in life from what we've been taught to have. I think we've gotten encrusted around. We've gotten so accustomed to orienting around pain. Pain as the guidance. And it happens so easily that if I take pain as the only or main guidance, it does give some guidance, but if I take it as the best guidance, the only guidance, it will take all our attention. All your energy goes to that. And then we don't find all the other guidance anymore. And we don't practice finding the other guidance. We practice following pain, which means my whole posture, literally, I mean, I'm exaggerating, but our body posture contracts around our pain, or whatever way it might contract outwardly, it might contract inwardly, but it contracts against so understandably. So it's not a problem in the usual way. So understandably, there's some contraction that's about pain in each one of us. In each one of us. Part of what happens when we contract because of the painful, we contract about pain, is we become blind to the fact that everybody is contracting about pain. And we are oriented to this pain. And either if they have pain, I don't have enough room for it or resources for it, and so I've got to like get away. Or I just actually don't even see how, oh no, but I have this loss. That no one else has. Or of course, I mean, not to try to cover all the psychology that can happen around pain, but of course there can be that looking for pain as a way of occupying myself to get away from my pain. Let me help you with your pain. But let's just make a big et cetera now, like, I'm not a psychologist. So I am kind of asking for this revolution in orientation. And it's luckily... Yes? No?
I'm just repeating. I like this revolution.
Yeah. In a revolution in orientation that luckily is mostly a subtle inner shift that can be really hard to take us apart from that crust. And then I think we don't even I don't think we even know what to say. Like, instead of orienting to pain, let's orient to what? So we could say life or aliveness for now. We could say, like, instead of contraction, openness. But also, luckily, it's more fun, I think, than just this really binary thing of, okay, let's stop orienting to pain and let's start orienting to blah. I think it's an orientation that has openness to it, because there's not going to be a name for what's going to be happening. It's not going to be one thing. It's not going to be one answer. It's not going to be one programming or a set of programming. The programming is the orientation to the painful. So, and it's not saying we don't need to deal with the fact that there's pain, but at all. That's not what I'm saying. But we can start to remember as we get rested, I think, much more easily. We can remember all the times that we found our resources much more available to be responsive to what's painful, to prevent unnecessary painfulness, to let the painful also go deeper, when our orientation somehow, surprisingly, wasn't in the contraction. Or as an orientation. There could be easily, and there will be, contraction, no problem, and not the whole orientation as contraction. But not against contraction. So I don't want to be unclear just because I'm not filling in a blank. Because I think we can be even a little bit simplistic and still not fill in the blank. So I think there is a revolution occurring, and I'd like to encourage all of us to keep being part of that. Because it's good, it's helpful, it's powerful, it's time. So it means still a lot of exploration of what does Jaya mean by orientation to painful. So it's partly where who I am is based on pain. It's based on an experience of vulnerability that I hide. Or that gets hidden. And so sometime along the way, we discover that we can allow vulnerability and survive. We can allow vulnerability and get met in a way that's so wonderful. But it's also, I would still say, it's not an orientation that's about vulnerability. Vulnerability is the language of the orientation to painful. It's my fear that being with how wide open it all is, actually, being a human being, how exposed, how dangerous, how potent, how many things out of our control. But the orientation to the painful takes all of that as something wrong. It potentially will hurt. It will hurt. It certainly will hurt. It does hurt. But it doesn't only hurt. And I think there is something in us that sometimes feels a bit like a wind, a nice wind, where we thought we were all solid. A wind that is very interested in all those exact same things. It's wide open, it's much bigger. It's much more ordinary. Life, myself, all everything is bigger and smaller and more out of control, more potent than what we tend to think. A couple things that can happen as we sort of topple out of this painfulness orientation into, maybe we just call it life, not even orientation, just life. or finding a way to kind of let life play through and be part of that playing. That life playing through, or openness, as we kind of sometimes usually accidentally fall into that. One thing that can happen is that we fall from a sense of I to a sense of we. So, for example, you have a problem. Something hurts. And it suddenly feels like we have a problem. We have this thing that hurts, and how are we going to, what are we going to do with this now? We're not, we, and whatever we, are not leaving you behind with your hurt there. And you are not orienting around getting left behind or trying not to get left behind, having to deal with your hurt by yourself. And also, and it can sound, does that make sense? It can sound contradictory, because it is, that also we can fall from, I'd say, they to I. So why don't they do something about, right? The noise or the bugs, or why don't they do something about Syria or ISIS or Trump or whatever? And no one around me is doing anything. No one around me is those they that's doing something. And just this little, like, the way a plant can just sort of start by curling, it can be kind of a curl when a plant first starts out. Something kind of uncurls, like a little bright stem. Inside, usually down somewhere. That feels, why don't I? Even though, who am I to, and everything, but why don't I? Or what if I? And then that I has a we. When that little thing uncurls every once in a while, of why don't I pick up that piece of trash? When we hear the mind saying, why don't I? Which, even better, it's not even in words, it's just something happens. And later we realize that thing that was hurting, that we were hearing about, and why don't they do something about it, and we feel helpless, and then we realize later that that small thing that we did was in that same bowl of pain or whatever. There was some response to that pain. There was not the distancy, there was not the overwhelm. There was some uncurling of the stem. And then maybe the similar feeling of the uncurling of the first stem. Do you know this word, stem? What would be stem in German? Stamm. Good. Stem. Stamm, stem, stamm. Let's say, first of all, when there is something painful, can give more or less an embrace for some time, for some pause, for a little bit longer. And just actually feel what could be good here. There's a sense of we. It's not like, I can't do this. But like, even if it's just you and your meditation, but there's a little bit of a feeling more towards we, of like, what shall happen now? What shall be needed now? What shall we do with this, since we're not leaving? So, you know, it really just needs a bit of soothing. So maybe, why not a little soothing? Or it really needs to just, some kind of shout or scream. It might be in a letter on a silent retreat. Or it might be come to the teacher, or find a pillow, go on a walk to the farthest and also, very often, just by feeling in the body, the contraction, even if that contraction, sometimes the contraction just shifts. It's so fascinating. It has its own answer. But it's also not that kind of mechanical thing that we can just get the right way of feeling it in a legal way. Which is, again, like the orientation to the pain, trying to get away from life because it's painful. But it's this tiny little stem. It's willing to uncurl. It's going to die, and it could so easily just be stomped. And it's just uncurling so brightly and thinly. Feeling all around. And apparently the plants can smell. Some of them, anyway, can smell the other plants around them. And so they start to go this way or that way. And we can let that sense of smell and willingness to uncurl start to land and find support. And so I'd like to just go really lightly through a few other things that I have noticed and been thinking about in this toppling over out of the contraction away from life, orientation to painfulness. And so one is, if we can feel the part of us that doesn't want to transform, and its orientation around painful is, instead of knowing how to look for food, instead of knowing how to look for what is needed, it's looking for specialness, even though it knows specialness isn't food. It knows specialness is not, doesn't have anything to do with this organism. And I have, some of you have heard this conversation with a friend, student of mine, who's a writer, and she was at a Christmas party and for her son, and the other parents were standing around talking about their properties, and she doesn't have properties. So she was, it just suddenly came over her like the way it does, such a wet, heavy blanket, probably a wet, heavy fur blanket. It'll smell awful and be so heavy, and she doesn't have property, she's a failure, what is she doing with her life? Not that she wants really to have properties, of course, but, and she could, sometimes it's much worse, although it's a good step to have to bear watching yourself go through that, thinking, oh, they have properties and I can't talk about my properties and I'm a failure, and just watching that whole thing, just, and knowing it's ridiculous, but still getting weighed down and even almost broken-backed. And so, it's so interesting that we can get that caught up, even watching myself get caught up, so caught up in that. And then the same person within minutes, but it's as if a different person, talked about how strengthening it was for her to receive recognition for some writing that she'd done, which can sound like specialness, but it wasn't. And she could really feel the difference. And for her, it was like, what? That's not specialness. That was like food. And it was partly because it was writing, about her, some pain that had reached people who had a similar situation, and it really helped them. And so I just want it to be really not confusing. The reaching for specialness that isn't food, we really know we are completely tricking ourselves. Spending all our energy to get something we don't really want, that won't be fulfilling, etc. To be able to fit in and talk about properties, for example. instead of having money to come on retreats was her thing. Not that she could buy a property with what that cost, but anyway. And then it doesn't mean recognition isn't important. It doesn't mean letting that plant uncurl and reach out and land, meet and be met. And that electricity and all those, that chemical exchange. That's important. That can be food. I mean, if someone is looking for recognition as their painfulness orientation, of course not. But for someone where there hasn't been recognition, where she's been really she's received the opposite of that very harshly much of her life, to let her voice uncurl, unfurl, and help, and find herself and her voice and her life bigger than what she was told, and bigger than how she was treated, and to feel that we, and that I also, not they, but I. They should write about this. And then just to maybe leave you with my questions and feel how they go for you. And one is around beauty. I keep finding there's a wonderful Zen poet, Ikkyu, who also, I mean, what a great name to have now as for us English speakers, Ikkyu, which of course means something else in Japanese, but Ikki is like gross and you is you, Ikkyu. And he was so unafraid of Ikki and so unafraid of you, Ikkyu. He liked to sleep, he would be homeless sometimes. He would go sleep under the bridge with the homeless people. And what, I mean, just to make, again, that it's not binary. He was so clear in being anti-establishment in his monastery and criticizing the way the government tried to take over. And so deep in his practice, and yet not, and completely wild with his blind lover as a monk, and his love poems to her are just incredible. His best poetry is his love poems to her. And he was eventually made the abbot of that monastery. He was made the head of the monastery later on. So it's just so cool what can happen when we allow it not to be, okay, let's change this orientation for that orientation. But let's change this orientation of being against because it's painful to something else that is nameless but is specific in a specific moment. It's very precise in a precise moment. So he talks about too, he also finds, like, why should it be so beautiful when it's kind of sucks so much to be alive? Why should life be so beautiful? Kind of like, how dare it be so beautiful? And so I want to just kind of plant that question or land that question or something, and maybe we'll come around to it again with more time, but just sort of like, okay, but then what is beauty? First of all, do we agree with Ikkyu? We might not. But it does seem to be this nearly, as I said yesterday, annoying or insulting way that even when it really sucks, there's beauty. And it seems like the beauty can call us into an intensity that has room for the pain. We wish it didn't. We wish there would be a place that there wouldn't be pain, that we could get to. And that's been our orientation all along. All along. Let's get away from that. Let's find something that will save us. And there's some other calling. And then also, there seems to be a possibility of intelligence in human being. Sometimes we have a glimpse of it. Sometimes there's a moment of it that we could recognize. There's so much not intelligence, but there seems to be this possibility of intelligence. And what is it? What is intelligence? If we don't mean the program, if we don't mean a set reaction to a set question, or a set like stimulus, therefore that. If we don't mean the usual predictable cause and effect. But when we've experienced somehow that we were willing to stay with a situation, for example, maybe it was a difficult situation, but because you loved the person, you stayed. Stayed in every sense, like not just stayed physically or not just stayed verbally, but you were there with your helplessness and not giving up and not freaking out and okay, what are we going to do here? Or what are we not going to do here? What are we not going to repeat here? How are we going to be with this not attacking? How are we going to be here not attacking, not against, not escaping? And you might have felt some shift, some different, completely different idea. Some completely different, just like my friend, though at some point she wished she had properties to talk about. She's glad she doesn't. And the recognition was real food. Some shift where her life isn't only about not having enough. There's this whole other, set of events that also happened that come into view that were invisible. We were blind to it before. When we're caught in the lack and not enough, we cannot find it. We have to just practice like, well, maybe this is not all. This pain and being against. Through escaping or fighting or whatever way. Getting blind. Getting dull. So somehow being willing to be here anyway, not knowing how, not being all powerful, not being in control, being exposed. And that is the joy of it. Some kind of lightning trickle where the mind moves differently. So I'll just read a short part of a poem to end. From Naomi Shihab Nye. And she's at the bay of the sea. So she can see all the way. The poem is called Across the Bay. And I'll give the very opening line and then skip down. She says, if we throw our eyes way out to sea, they thank us. All those corners we've made them sit down in lately, those objects with dust along their seams. So just like the against, the contraction orientation, and then what else? Throwing our eyes way out to sea. They thank us. It's something natural that comes back, kind of, or comes up. Out here, eyes find the edge that isn't one. Out here, eyes find the edge that isn't one. So we find that our eyes can find an edge that isn't an edge, that can find an orientation that isn't an orientation, that it's not a fixed direction. How far can the wind carry whatever lets go? Light shining from dead stars cradles our sleep. Secret light, no one reads by. Who owns that beam? Who follows it far enough? Okay, I think we'll mostly save it for tomorrow and let it be like what? But some of the English words are harder, so. A beam can be like something that holds up a roof, or it can be like the ray of light. How far can the wind carry whatever lets go? Light, shining from dead stars, cradles our sleep. So there's so much that's unknown, but that the way that life is actually about, from one way of language, letting go, giving it. The stars gave out their light, now they're dead, the light's still coming. And while we're sleeping, we don't even know it, it's cradling us. So that there may be friendliness out there in here, around here, that we're blind to when we're against. Secret light, no one reads by. Reads by. It's not a light anyone is using. It's not useful. It's not used. Who owns that beam? Who follows it far enough? May all beings be peaceful, in joy, at home in our lives, at home in our lives of transformation, at home in our friendly transformation, friendly with our transformation. And may our practice and lives be dedicated to the power of awakening, that momentum of awakening for all, including ourselves.